Moncrief with Gas Networks Ireland. Aren't you tired of that ugly fuel storage tank, having to order and write that big check for the delivery guy? gasnetworks.ie/move to gas.
Jan, please bring up your illusion cake.
I think what you produced there is a work of art. I love the way you've used the Rice Krispies, and then the eggs look incredible.
The little salmon roe, it'll taste like mango, and your brain is telling you one thing and your taste buds telling you another. We should be eating it with a chopsticks. Oh, look at that. Isn't that beautiful? I think it's got good banana flavour.
The cake is slightly too dry. It's unfortunate, but that design is incredible.
That is a little piece from The Great British Bake Off, which turned to our screens on Tuesdays at 8 p.m. It's a kind of a big talking point because, as you know, they've replaced three of the regular crew in what is a much, much loved BBC series, which is now on Channel 4. James is here for TV on the Radio to tell us more about it. What did you make of it all, James?
So I'm a big Bake Off fan.
So am I.
And have been even from the very first season. I remember I kind of stumbled upon it. My mother, it was back when I was living at home, and my mother was watching it on the BBC, and it was on BBC Two at the time. And I stumbled upon it about halfway through the first series, or season, as I guess we say now, and was hooked pretty much from since then, and have watched everyone since then. And this is like sport for non-sporty people, because I always think what's so appealing about the Great British Bake Off is that everybody eats. So even like if you're watching other reality competition programs, you can't really sort of get in the mind frame of what they're producing, because often they're these very obscure things like making clothes, which obviously I can't do, making pottery, you know, singing out of this incredible ability, being a drag queen, etc. None of those things I do or will admit to doing.
Yeah, you seem very defensive about really being very clear that you don't do any of those things, but that's fair enough.
But I am very, I like to think of myself as a good cook, and I think of myself as an even better eater. So watching the show, it's like real, it's aspirational,
yeah,
because
it
you see stuff that you can do. The other and you can sort of appreciate, even if you can't taste it, they do a very good job at sort of laying down a good appraisal of it and describing how it tastes or the condition and so on and so forth. So on the one hand, I just think it's great comfort television. On the other hand, it's also almost very comforting television.
Yes.
Because they're all so nice to each other. What I always think is so remarkable about this as a competition is that nobody wants to beat the others. They just want to be the best. So they're not stabbing each other in the back. They're not, you know, knocking each other's cakes deliberately off a cake stand and, you know, trying to scupper someone else. Instead, they're all just doing their best and trying to do their best and want to be the best. And they take it so seriously. I mean, you see the tears rolling down their face.
So against that backdrop, something that you really love, and everyone loves gathering around the TV for it, and some people have rituals. We have a ritual. One of ours bakes one of the cakes in the previous week.
Oh, wow.
Each week, which we eat during it. So I'm sure that's repeated in houses right across.
I'm sure, but that's you must.
Yes.
So you must gain weight a bit during the bake-off season.
I do, yeah. And I gain weight all the time, actually. But people were really worried that it was gone from the BBC, where you get this, it's the home of Warm and Cozy, and it's going to Channel 4, and they're bringing in Noel Fielding, and already you're starting to go, oh, I don't know about this. So what did you make of all the transition?
So when that news story broke last summer, and that, you know, looking back to 2016, which everyone thinks of as this horrific year across the board, that really was one of the biggest stories of the year. And it dominated airwaves for at least a week, if not. Because first we had the revelation that it was happening, and then a couple of days later we had the news that Mel and Sue and Mary were not going with it. Now, I'm a Mel and Sue fan. I know not everybody is. So I do think the show is, I do think it loses something in having them, because they steered it in their own way. They, you know, they stirred it, I should even really say, in their own way and made it their own. I don't necessarily know if we needed another duo, because Mel and Sue have been together working as a comedy duo for 20 years. They just come as a package. And I think they're now off to the Generation Game is actually what they're doing next.
Yeah.
But we have this newly formed duo of Noel Fielding of the Mighty Boosh and the IT Crowd fame. with Sandy Toksvig of of QI and whatever that daytime BBC show was back in the 90s, Call My Bluff, which yes. I used to love as well.
Remembered.
Yeah, thank you. That was my misspent summers, watching Call My Bluff. So misspent. Anyway, so they've been put together. I mean, I thought they were very pleasant and I thought the whole thing was extremely pleasant. I actually didn't find it too much of a culture shock. I thought it hit all the right notes. Admittedly, it wasn't as sort of winky-winky, you know, a double entendre as Mel and Sue were, but I thought it was relatively straightforward and ultimately nice. And yeah. I don't mean that as faint praise. I mean, this show trades on nicety.
It does.
So I think they hit that tone perfectly.
Yeah, I really liked it. And I liked the balloon intro, which I think gave it a lovely style feeling to it. It felt like a real adventure, a real Disney type of adventure beginning on our screens again. It's like they recognize this as something very special that you mustn't mess with. So I'd no trouble at all with the two of them. But Prue Leith, I thought, was spectacular.
Did you?
Yes, I did.
I found myself quite indifferent to her. So what? Really? What did you like so much about her?
Well, I know her of old because she used to do the Great British Menu, which was a program we watched long and hard, which was where very famous chefs trying to get to cook for the Queen. And I just found Prue very measured in her criticisms of things, and with lovely tone to her voice as well. So she's somebody I really warmed to, and there was familiarity with me because I like her and it was good to see her there.
It's intriguing that, you know, the Bake Off has sold now around the world in different packages. And I was in France actually at one point over Christmas and I saw the French version. And they've also gone for, you know, quote unquote sexy young pâtissière, which I don't know if you would apply to Paul Hollywood or not, that's a subjective thing, but they've also then gone for sort of a graying older, you know, granny type figure. So I'm wondering if this is sort of part of
I think parcel that ties into the whole baking thing. I think we just all have in our heads that your granny has these secrets in the kitchen that she's able to turn out these pastries that nobody else in the world can touch, and they're kind of buying into that. And Prue, I don't know if Prue is quite as good as Mary at that. Mary was the queen of it.
I did think she was, she was styled as Mary would be. And I thought as an opening episode went, it was very promising. And I'm not the only one because there were 6.5 million viewers all in, which for Channel 4 is actually very big.
It's still 4 million viewers less than last season's launch.
Yeah, which I suppose...
That speaks volumes though for it. We say it here in News Talk that people buy their cars and their radios are tuned to a certain other station, and that they sell their cars and it's still tuned to that other station. That's the BBC equivalent, isn't it?
They
really can't retune their TVs.
Yeah, I mean, so the opening episode of last year was 10 million people, and I think the finale, I could be wrong, it was as many maybe as 17 million, which was like the most watched TV episode of the entire year, which shows that it had amazing pulling power. Look, it's not going to hit those figures with Channel 4 because Channel 4 never hits those figures. But it's still doing very well.
Did the ads detract for you?
I don't know. Like, I thought the ads detracted when I was watching it on TV3 when they were doing the Great Irish Bake Off. But my real problem with that was they actually got rid of one of the challenges. So as people know, there's signature technical showstopper. In the TV3 version, there was only ever two challenges.
Okay.
Which was just... not the same.
Yeah, no.
Here you get at least, you get the three challenges. It lasts for, I guess, an hour and 15 to 20 minutes is the show running time. You know, the advantage of having a commercial break is you can go put on the kettle.
You can
go make a phone call. You can go to the bathroom. You can do whatever you need to do.
You can record the previous night and fast forward.
You could also do that.
Another option, yes. A quick look at, we have more TV to talk about in a moment, but TV news, a movie from 2008, which I think most people won't be able to remember, Making the Jump to the Small Screen.
Yeah, so this is a kind of a real out of nowhere story. So this movie called Jumper came out in 2008. It is not about hosiery.
How disappointing.
It is about people who are able to teleport around the world. It starred Hayden Christensen. You'll remember him, of course, from the Star Wars rebooted saga and nothing since then. And Rachel Bilson, who you'll remember from The OC and nothing really since then. And then Jamie Bell, who made his big impact as... Billy Elliot way back when in the 90s. So Jamie Bell is seemingly is pushing through a small screen version of it where it's believed his character is going to be the front and center of the show, and they're working around it. That's all we've gotten, but it's sort of come out of absolutely nowhere. And Jamie Bell is not an actor with great cachet in Hollywood because he needs a hit at this stage. So if he thinks this is it, he might have to go and jump.
Interesting facts. 16% on Rotten Tomatoes. That's pretty...
That's dire.
That's really...
Still made 220 million at the box office. So.
There's a horrible correlation between those two facts, which which makes me think that somebody thinks this is absolutely rubbish, but they like it. Let's make more of it.
Yeah.
That's scary. Very scary indeed. We talked about Rick and Morty, Morty last week on the show.
Did you see any episodes?
Not yet, no. Mine is limited time. I haven't even seen the Game of Thrones finale yet, but I have got it recorded. But they've had to distance themselves from the TV network joke added to the end of the show. What's that about?
Right, so the most recent episode of Rick and Morty on the US network Adult Swim, which is, I think, a cartoon channel, a kids cartoon, turns into Adult Swim in the evening, and it broadcasts less child-friendly cartoons. They ended the most recent episode by putting a title card on that had a black screen in white writing, good writing on Game of Thrones. Oh, sorry, the writing on Game of Thrones 2011 to 2016. So people thought that the writers of Rick and Morty were, you know, throwing shade, we'll say, at this season of Game of Thrones, which has perhaps been the most divisive one
in
its run.
I know I haven't seen the finale, but even on the ones I've seen, the general consensus seems to be that the writing has gone downhill very severely. Would you be concurring with that?
Ooh, I don't know. I mean, I still think I enjoyed the whole thing as a journey. The finale, I don't want to really say anything about the finale because I don't want to tip you off beyond saying that at 80 minutes, I felt I could have seen all of the episode in a good 40 minutes.
Okay. That doesn't augur well.
No, it doesn't augur well.
Right, we'll talk more about that, but I don't want to ruin it for everyone as well.
This window's closed, ne'er-do-wellers. No withdrawals today.
What the hell is this? Give us our money.
I'm trying.
Now, before I send you both packing, either of you reprobates know of a fella named Overkill?
Shoot this clown.
You go and tell your boss this establishment is under my protection. In fact, the entire block. And the city.
Wait, come back. I have your money. It is here.
Put your money away.
You're going to kill me.
Not on my watch.
The voices sound great. That's from The Tick, the first half of season one, now streaming on Amazon Video Prime. James here tells more about it. The voices sound great.
So yeah, The Tick is sort of a very interesting property. It's more interesting, I will say, than this particular version of it. The Tick began life, we'll say, in, I think, 1987 in a small comic book store somewhere in, I think it was in Massachusetts somewhere, and began as just this 18-year-old guy named Ben Edlund just wrote his own little character. And little is not really the right word because The Tick is this big, you know, hulking mass of muscle. And he wrote it as a specific to the comic book store, just as a little kind of, you know, fan service to people who would be coming in and buying comic books and getting its newsletter. And since then, it has developed into this real cult followed comic book character that has now had three different TV iterations. So the first was, which I remember from my childhood, an animated series, a children's animated series in the 90s. Then in 2001, there was a live action series with Patrick Warburton, who people will know as the voice of Joe in Family Guy. He's got this real distinctive voice. You definitely know him. He's also the narrator, Lemony Snicket, in A Series of Unfortunate Events. He's a character actor with this very deep voice that you just definitely will know when you see him. Now, that one launched a couple of days after 9/11, which obviously is not the best time to be launching an absurdist, satirical comic book character about a superhero. So it didn't last very long. We are now back again 16 years later for the third run. All three of them have been made by the creator, Ben Edlund, and he's involved in this one as well. For my two cents, this is the weakest of the three. Beyond, despite the fact that it has the highest production values, tonally, I found it very strange. Now, we are in this unusual era of superheroics on screen right now because, look, you can't go to the cinema once every 2 months without finding some kind of superhero property there to consume. And that has now bled into the small screen as well because we've had Netflix launching its various Marvel tie-ins with Jessica Jones and Daredevil and Iron Fist and Luke Cage. The only one of which really is worth watching, I would say, is Jessica Jones, but that's, again, for other people to decide. So we've now got Amazon getting in on the action. For what it's worth, in my opinion, people who are listening at home, if they take any, you know, if they've been listening to me for a while and they take credence in what I say, this is best avoided. I have watched all of the 6 episodes. They are just not hitting the right tone that they're trying for. They're sort of aping for this kind of tongue-in-cheek and silly, but also a bit serious and introspective and just odd tone is what you get here, really. And I just don't think it worked at all. I mean, I thought the action was not particularly interesting. I thought the jokes weren't particularly funny. Across the board, it was weak.
Amazed to hear that, because we've talked about Amazon Video Prime, which is really trying to make a name for itself.
And yes.
Netflix, I'm sure of which it's well aware, made a name for itself by commissioning some really great TV. So it is kind of incumbent on Amazon to do the same thing. So
yeah, the truth is, it's kind of interesting. In this online streaming market, Amazon actually came out earliest with the real credible one, which was Transparent, which is an excellent sort of comedy drama about a man transitioning into a woman later in life in California. It is absolutely fantastic. I highly recommend it. It has won numerous awards and big ones, Emmys and Golden Globes, etc. But since then, they've really failed to sort of capture anything else that has had the same sort of commercial or critical success. Mm. So they are fading, or they're not fading so much as lagging behind. This show is not going to be the one that gets them back on course.
Yeah. Disappointing. There's another show you want to mention, The Thin Green Line, happening on Thursdays on RT1. What's that about?
This was really, I thought, an intriguing premise, particularly for me, because when I was in college, I studied languages, and my whole time I was there, they were always saying to us, and you can go and work in the Irish Diplomatic Service, you can work in the Department of Foreign Affairs and go abroad and work, you know, in the Irish embassies abroad. So this is a documentary about the Irish embassies and Irish diplomacy.
We have a tiny clip from it. This is from The Thin Green Line.
34 million Americans claim Irish descent from generations of immigrants going back to the family. Today, thousands of them want an Irish passport.
My grandfather was born in Ireland. I wasn't born in Ireland. Our child can be an Irish citizen if I am an Irish citizen before he or she is born.
Thank you.
Oh, perfect. Thank you very much.
My grandparents immigrated here in the 20s. I'm getting my Irish passport for the first time. Be nice to try it out, be able to skip the long lines at the airport. And I plan on heading to Europe for a few months this winter.
Sounds interesting. It would fascinate me. I came across the in Switzerland, when I saw Lost Passports there, I had that experience of going there with your your tail between your legs, saying, I have a flight back to Ireland in 2 days' time. Can you do that? That's great. You do the sense of welcoming, and don't worry, we'll look after this.
Yeah.
It's wonderful.
I also, a friend of mine works in the, she works in Hanoi in Vietnam in the embassy there. So I have, somewhat a vested interest in this, because I have a vague idea of kind of what they do. Regrettably, I would say I entered this with high hopes, and certainly there are important people attached here. So included in the first episode was Dan Mulhall, who's the Irish ambassador to the UK, Geraldine Byrne Nason, ambassador to France, Barbara Jones, the consul general in New York, and Sinead Walsh, who's the ambassador in Sierra Leone. So those are big names. What I will still say is they're almost two big names. Like, I would be almost more intrigued to see what the third secretaries do, what the people lower down in the ranks inside the embassy are doing all day long, because maybe it is really boring, but actually it's also a very important thing that they're doing. Maybe they're just helping people with their lost passports.
In
like
a very
you.
Charming way.
I hope so.
Yes.
But I thought that we didn't get really enough diversity here, because here we have, right, the UK, France and New York.
Yeah.
There are three sort of first world countries that are really the same. You know, our relationship to them, admittedly Brexit plays a bigger role, you know, but this is, I think, Brexit is discussed here, but not in a really sort of insightful way. So I just thought those three countries were the same. It was more intriguing, actually, to see the Irish ambassador to Sierra Leone, particularly because she seemed to be speaking like a kind of pidgin English dialect to the local people in Sierra Leone, going through this village that had been absolutely ravaged by Ebola. That was very interesting, because it was something completely and utterly new to me. Whereas, you know, do I really care about the Irish ambassador to Paris having a meeting in the Elysee Palace where they sort of talk about stuff behind closed doors?
No, not really. Okay, no. Not enough insights then, it would seem, from behind the closed doors. Dare I ask, did you get a look at what's happening on TV3?
They launched, they had their big launch yesterday, and it was seemingly, TV3 I really admire, more so from afar than as a regular viewer, because I really admire how they just have turned creating live TV into their niche, and sort of how they've been actually quite clever at bringing in British shows and generally making a very good stab of them. So I'm delighted Gogglebox is back, because I think Gogglebox Ireland is fantastic. I actually think it's even better than the UK one, because the households aren't as jaded or showy as they are across the Irish Sea. Also, what we're going to get some new stuff is we're going to have Ireland's Got Talent is arriving, and you won't be surprised to know that the judges include Louis Walsh.
Oh no. Really?
Yes. Comedian Jason Byrne, West End star Denise Van Outen, and perhaps the most unusual one is the outspoken American TV personality Michelle Visage, who I don't know if you're familiar with her.
No.
She is a judge on RuPaul's Drag Race, which is actually on Netflix. Well worth a watch. You mightn't think so, but as reality competitions go, it is very, very entertaining. Also coming is Blind Date with Al Porter in the Cilla Black role. Then you have Maya Dunphy, who's going to host Heartbreak Hotel, which will take people who are fresh from broken relationships and I think put them off in some kind of hotel for the weekend and see what sort of sparks fly. You have Living with Lucy, which has been running for a long time now, with Lucy Kennedy, who's also actually going to be the presenter of Ireland's Got Talent. She is going to be spending some time with GAA legend Davy Fitzgerald, Kerry politician Michael Healy-Rae.
Oh, wow.
Which, I think is what most people will be saying. And former EastEnders actress Daniela Westbrook, who I think is kind of...
Wow, also.
Yes. Then you have a new new sort of home design show with Lawrence Llewellyn Bowen of Changing Rooms fame. Haven't seen much of him since then. And then sort of the Irish guy Neville Knott, who people will certainly know if they've been watching any of those. That's called Showhouse Showdown, where the two of them will be designing competing rooms in different show houses, because I guess the building is back in the country. The Restaurant is back. The X Factor is back. I'm a Celeb is back. The Voice is back. Britain's Got Talent as well, so we're
good stuff.
Plenty.
And no Vincent, so it's going to be, I believe, Matt and Ivan.
It is, as well as Mario Rosenstock on Thursday evenings.
Slagging them.
Yeah.
Good. Bring it on. James, thanks very much.
Moncrief with Gas Networks Ireland. Aren't you tired of that ugly fuel storage tank? Having to order and write that big check for the delivery guy? gasnetworks.ie/movetogas